Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
A disinformation tsunami.
Bots, fake accounts and real people.
I see disinformation in so many different ways.
We didn't know what to listen to. We didn't know what to follow.
Where is there reliable information?
Whose truth? Available now. Search for The Documentary wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Alex Ritson, and in the early hours of Wednesday, the 5th of June, these are our main stories.
We are all very grateful to members of the public. Citizens have expressed full confidence in the BJP and NDA. It's a victory of unwavering loyalty to the Constitution of India.
Another term for Prime Minister Narendra Modi, but not the majority he was expecting. In the US, President Biden announced a new policy on immigration at the border with Mexico. The British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and opposition leader Keir Starmer have made their pitch to voters in the first head-to-head TV debate of the general election. Also in this podcast, Switzerland's Air Force pilots prepare to practice takeoffs and landings on the country's motorway network. We begin with the Indian election. Official results show an alliance led by the incumbent Prime Minister will form the next government. But Narendra Modi was unable to win a majority for his party, the BJP, with far fewer seats won than the last election 5 years ago. An alliance led by Mr. Modi did win enough seats to allow him to serve as Prime Minister for a third term. And for this, he was given a hero's welcome, as our South Asia correspondent Samira Hussain reports from Delhi.
As Mr. Modi walked into BJP headquarters, supporters roared with excitement, throwing flower petals on the Prime Minister. He took to the podium and declared himself Prime Minister once again, thanking the people of India for their support.
We are all very grateful to members of the public. Citizens have expressed full confidence in the BJP and NDA. Today's victory is the victory of the world's largest democracy. It's a victory of unwavering loyalty to the Constitution of India.
But Mr. Modi was clear to call this a victory for his ruling party, the BJP, and the NDA, the alliance of parties he needs to be able to form a government. The results are a blow for the Prime Minister, who rode into this election campaign expecting a landslide, but a surprise win for the Indian National Congress, led by Rahul Gandhi, who called this a win for democracy.
The country has unanimously and clearly stated, we do not want Mr. Narendra Modi to be involved in the running of this country. So that is a huge message to Mr. Narendra Modi.
But it will be a coalition government with a weaker mandate, uncharted territory for the Prime Minister.
Samira Hussain. Our South Asia regional editor, Anbarasan Etarajan, says that Mr. Modi, so powerful for the last 10 years in India, will now be forced to make compromises.
For the first time, he needs the support of junior partners in the alliance to get the majority in the government. They have already crossed 272. That means whether he can push through some of the Hindu nationalist or extreme right-wing agenda, as some of the politicians and oppositions would describe that. So what happened in the building of a temple for a Hindu god, Ram, that happened in the previous term, or taking away the special status of the Kashmir region that triggered widespread protests. Now, people are talking about how far he can go to implementing a common civil law for all the religious communities, because India has got personal laws different for Muslims and Christians and different communities. So he needs to get a consensus among the coalition partners, who are also, you know, they are not religion-based or right-wing political parties. So they may have to have a compromise on talking with other political parties. So he might find it difficult. And adjusting with them on various other issues could be a challenge for him, because all along he has projected himself as a strong leader, a strong man who's going to take India to the next level. And the two terms he had, that's what he was projecting himself as, that image. Now he needs to understand the new coalition politics.
So which parties is he likely to go into coalition with?
There are many parties in the coalition. The two major parties, one is a Telugu Desam party from the state of Andhra Pradesh and also from the state of Bihar, Janata Dal United. And both were, you know, critics of Modi at some point in the past 20 years. So it is a very strange combination of political parties coming together. But what is interesting to see is how this election, even though the Congress party has failed to get a majority, did not win, even the BJP on its own did not get a majority. But everyone thinks that it is good for democracy because this is the time when you have to have a strong opposition in parliament. Because previously, some of the think tanks in Western countries called India partly free, an electoral autocracy. So this is a good day for democracy because all the major political parties had something to gloat about.
And Barasan Etirajan. Joe Biden has announced measures aimed at curbing migrant arrivals at the US-Mexico border. It will stop undocumented migrants from receiving asylum, but only takes effect when officials decide the southern border has been overwhelmed. Speaking in Washington, he said the executive action was necessary to regain control of the border, and he blamed Republicans for the collapse of a bipartisan deal.
To protect America as a land that welcomes immigrants, we must first secure the border and secure it now. The simple truth is there is a worldwide migrant crisis. And if the United States doesn't secure our border, there's no limit to the number of people may try to come here. For those who say the steps I've taken are too strict, I say to you that be patient. Doing nothing is not an option.
I got more on the president's announcement from our Washington correspondent, Nomia Iqbal.
President Biden wants to change the political narrative around immigration. He really wants to show strength on an issue that we know from the polls voters are unhappy about. What has been announced is that the border will shut if the number of people attempting to cross it reaches a certain threshold of 2,500. And these new measures will take effect immediately. There'll be some exceptions for unaccompanied children. And Mr. Biden has said when the crossings fall back to a daily average, there would be this provision that allows people to resume their asylum petitions. But he's already created, you know, huge controversy with it, particularly with a lot of civil liberties groups. And they believe that this is President Biden lurching to the right.
It still needs to go through Congress, doesn't it?
These are executive actions. This is sort of like a wish list of what the president wants. He still wants to put forward legislation to resolve the crisis on the border. And he has been pushing unsuccessfully for months to pass a Senate bill. And that would toughen border security. And Mr. Biden has said legislation is still the only way to permanently address border security and immigration reforms. But these executive actions, he is hoping that they will be taken on. But he's already facing a lot of legal challenges on this by groups like ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, who say that it contravenes the rights of asylum seekers to seek asylum in America.
Has he essentially been forced into doing this by the Republicans?
It's a good question. And I think a lot of critics will say, yes, he has, that he's lurched to the right because the polls show that this is an issue that Americans care about. There was a poll that was conducted back in March by the Associated Press that found 2/3 of Americans disapprove of his handling of the border. And that included about 40% of Democrat voters. And so whilst Mr. Biden has accused the Republicans of weaponizing this, I think that there will be plenty on the other side who say, well, he has done the same. And one of the criticisms that he's really facing over this is that in this action, he's relying on a presidential authority, which was actually set up under Donald Trump's administration. And basically, this is where the president has the authority to suspend the entry of any applicants if they find it would be detrimental to the interests of the US. Now, you might remember that this was used by Donald Trump when he was president to ban immigration and travel from several predominantly Muslim countries. So he is being accused of basically enacting Donald Trump's policies.
Nomia Iqbal. To the US state of Delaware, where the first prosecution witness has taken the stand in the criminal trial of President Biden's son Hunter on charges that he lied about his drug use when he bought a Colt revolver in 2018. Our North America correspondent Tom Bateman sent this report from outside the court.
Well, the first opening statement was from federal prosecutor Derek Hines, and he set out to portray Hunter Biden as a self-confessed habitual crack cocaine addict who lied in order to purchase a handgun here in Wilmington, Delaware in 2018. And what the prosecution alleges is that Hunter Biden knowingly misled when he declared that he wasn't a drug abuser, when the prosecution says he clearly knew at the time that he was. And Mr. Hines stood before the jury and at the very start of his statement made a clear reference to the fact that the person they had to hear these allegations about was the son of the US president. Mr. Hines saying that no one is above the law, it doesn't matter who you are or what your name is. Now, behind Hunter Biden for the second day, key members of the Biden family in the public benches, among them his stepmother, the First Lady Jill Biden, who was very close to Hunter in terms of sitting about a metre behind him, and the family talking to each other at various points during the proceedings. Next up was Mr. Biden's lawyer for the defence, Abby Lowell, who set out to say that this case was all about the detail of what that form actually said. And the defence's argument is that Mr. Biden at the time did not regard himself as a user of drugs and addicted to illegal drugs because they said he'd been in a rehab clinic in California before that period. And so when he ticked the box to say he wasn't a drug user, that was meant honestly. And they're asking for the jury in that sense to throw out all of these charges. After that, we'll be getting into the first witnesses in the case. The first among those, a special agent for the FBI who was put onto the Hunter Biden investigation last year, and further witnesses due to be called over the course of the next 2 weeks, the length that this trial is expected to proceed. As for Hunter Biden, he denies all three felony counts against him.
Tom Bateman. From today, Wednesday, the Swiss Air Force is practicing takeoffs and landings on a motorway. As Alison Davis reports, with the war in Ukraine and increased tension with Russia, it's something Swiss motorists are likely to see more of in the future.
A Swiss Air Force plane taking off from a base in central Switzerland. From tomorrow, such planes will take off from a Swiss motorway. The exercise has its roots in the late 1950s when the Swiss Parliament approved the use of several makeshift runways on motorways. During the Cold War, so-called highway operations became part of standard training activities in parts of Europe when the risk of a Soviet attack on NATO air bases could suddenly render them unavailable. Since the invasion of Ukraine, some other European countries have also, again, been conducting similar exercises. The goal, says the Swiss Air Force, to prepare crews and pilots to operate away from military structures so that in the event of a conflict, air defence can be guaranteed when bases are out of action. Are there, though, not practical problems like the small matter of central crash barriers? Professor Justin Bronk of the Royal United Services Institute is a specialist in air power and technology.
There are modified sections of motorway which tend to not only have kind of central barriers often removed or quickly removable, absent overhead lighting. They're often wider as well, but also most aircraft designed for these operations have modifications to make it less likely that they will suck up loose stones and debris that might be on a normal road surface.
So from tomorrow, the journeys of some Swiss motorists will be disrupted when a stretch of the A1 motorway near the town of Avenches is closed for 36 hours. The purpose of the exercise is also to test that, in a conflict, if motorways are transformed into airfields, they can be returned to their original purpose in a matter of hours.
Alison Davis. Coming up...
I was just so thrilled for them because I knew they'd been looking for several years for a dinosaur.
The boys from North Dakota who've made a prehistoric discovery.
of social media where there's bubbles of conflicting opinions.
All kinds of wrong and misleading information.
Conspiracy theories.
Plants for various nefarious figures.
This has changed our world.
Whose Truth is a documentary series from the BBC World Service exploring misinformation in the digital age. Join me, Babita Sharma, as I hear from the Nobel laureates and young activists trying to tackle it.
Climate refugees can also lead climate action.
Listen now by searching for The Documentary wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
For the first time since the election was called, the leaders of Britain's two main parties have gone head-to-head in front of a live TV studio audience. Keir Starmer, who heads the main opposition Labour Party, faced up to the current Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, from the Conservative Party. This was Keir Starmer's big pitch.
This election is about who our country works for. The simple patriotic belief that Britain can be better and must be better. Imagine how you would feel waking up on July the 5th to five more years of the Conservatives. The choice at this election is clear. More chaos with the Conservatives or the chance to rebuild Britain with a changed Labour Party.
For his part, the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, had this message for voters.
Either Keir Starmer or I will be your Prime Minister, and a vote for anyone else makes it more likely that it will be him. And we've heard a lot about change from him. But change to what? Keir Starmer is asking you to hand him a blank cheque when he hasn't said what he'll buy with it or how much it's going to cost you. In uncertain times, we simply cannot afford an uncertain Prime Minister.
So what did we learn from the debate? Our UK political correspondent Rob Watson was watching and spoke to me a short time ago.
We learnt that the two parties are going to stick doggedly to their messages, and that is from Rishi Sunak, the governing Conservatives, who are trailing miles behind, kilometres behind in the opinion polls. It's to try and do something to sow doubt about the opposition, to say they're going to raise your taxes, you can never really trust a party of the left. Whereas Keir Starmer was sticking doggedly to his message, which was to keep reminding British voters about the Conservatives' 14 years in power, as he would say, the chaos, all the Prime Minister, Brexit and all the other sort of drama. Does it help to clarify voters' views? I mean, research is sort of contrasting on that. I've seen some research that suggests it does help people make up their minds, and others that it doesn't have very much effect. I can tell you that there's been some interesting instant polling on it from a company called YouGov, which thought that most is pretty much a draw, although the word that most of the voters seemed to agree on to describe the debate was frustrating. 62% thought that.
And no knockout punch. And it is, in a way, knockout punches that maybe could change the wider dial.
Well, the one person who needs a knockout punch is Rishi Sunak, because the Conservatives are trailing something like 20 percentage points, a bit more in the polls, which is truly dangerous territory for the Conservatives. Did he do that? No. Will he be happy that he kept repeating endlessly, you know, time after time, Labour means more taxes? Sure. But yeah, knockout punch. I didn't see one. Maybe I ducked. He ducked.
And no reference to what I heard you describing yesterday as perhaps the most important development in the campaign, and that is the re-entry of the man who was basically the figurehead of Brexit.
Absolutely. That's the return of Nigel Farage, probably one of the most consequential politicians since Mrs. Thatcher. I mean, without him, I don't think Britain would have left the European Union. No, I mean, there was only one brief reference, the one that we heard at the end there from Mr. Sunak, the man who has the most to worry about the vote on the right being fragmented between him and Reform, where he said, look, a vote for anything other than me means a vote for Mr. Starmer. In other words, saying if you vote for Reform, you're going to get Labour. But that was the only way in which it came up. But Mr. Farage is a challenge to both main parties, to mainstream politics, but particularly the Conservatives.
Rob Watson. To Russia now. President Putin's spokesman has dismissed accusations from the technology firm Microsoft that Russia has been stepping up a disinformation campaign to spread the fear of violence ahead of the Olympic Games in Paris. Dmitry Peskov called the allegations slander. Your original editor Danny Eberhardt reports.
The Paris Olympics kicks off at the end of July. Russia's been banned, although some of its athletes can take part as neutrals. On Sunday, Microsoft made detailed allegations in a blog post. It accused two Russian groups of creating and distributing fake material, designed both to deter spectators by heightening fears of a potential terrorist attack and to denigrate the International Olympic Committee. Some was distributed on hoax versions of real, reputable news sites. Some was very sophisticated, including, it said, a fake feature-length documentary with slick special effects and AI-generated audio impersonating the Hollywood star Tom Cruise. Microsoft's warning adds to one issued by President Emmanuel Macron in April. He's angered Moscow by, among other things, refusing to rule out potentially sending French troops to Ukraine.
Danny Eberhardt. Poland will vote in EU elections this weekend, with Europe's role in supporting Ukraine high on the agenda. Poland has a long border with Ukraine, but Russia and Belarus are its neighbours too. As some EU countries have wavered in their commitment to assisting Ukraine militarily, Poland has been a firm voice insisting that the threat from Russia is real and close. But there are signs of strains in relations with Kyiv. Our Europe correspondent Sarah Rainsford reports.
Up on Poland's northern border, a patrol car splashes through the mud. To one side, there are coils of barbed wire, and beyond that is Kaliningrad, Russian territory that's heavily militarized. So Poland is on alert. The border guard's cameras trained across the divide. The barbed wire went up after the full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Ever since then, Poland has warned constantly that Vladimir Putin won't stop there. Now Prime Minister Donald Tusk is making Russia his big issue at the European elections. Reinforcing Poland's northern border, he told one campaign rally, was about warning the enemy to stay away. He's planning to spend millions more, with more surveillance, even trenches. And in Polish schools, there are new security drills. They're run by soldiers with a territorial defence, preparing young people here in case of an emergency.
The Georgian have just been told to get up. They're practicing an emergency evacuation now with one of the soldiers following on behind. Obviously, there are drills and practices like this in schools right around the world all the time. But this one in Poland has extra urgency because of the war in Ukraine right on Poland's border.
There are resuscitation drills as well as evacuation.
Did they explain to you why they're doing this now?
I think the Russia is near to us and they could attack us, I think.
We are in danger.
But fearing Moscow doesn't always mean unconditional support for Kyiv.
We've just come to the countryside, less than an hour from Warsaw, and I'm walking through an apple orchard. The fruit, for now, just about the size of some quite large cherry tomatoes. I've come here to talk to the farmers because when it comes to the EU, I think they're less concerned about security in the sense of Russian aggression than the security of their income here, working in Polish agriculture.
Golden, Szarareneta, Jona Goldy, we are the heart of apple in the Poland.
Is there good money to be made from apples now in Poland?
No, it is very, very low money.
Farmers here have left their fields lately to protest in Warsaw and on the Ukrainian border. Men like Mariusz, who says Ukrainian goods are starting to flood the market. Some are allowed into the EU tariff-free to help an economy that's being battered by war. But those goods are undercutting Polish produce, and Mariusz says they're threatening his livelihood.
It looks like Ukraine is fighting a war on two fronts, one with Russia and the other against Polish farmers, an economic and agricultural war. If this continues, we will just perish. We have no chance.
Protecting farmers is a card that the main opposition in Poland's playing at these EU elections. But they also believe in standing firm against Russia and the message that all Europe needs to remain united and on guard.
Sarah Rainsford. Gunmen have killed the female mayor of a town in Mexico. It comes just hours after the country celebrated the election of Claudia Sheinbaum as the nation's first woman president. The BBC's Latin America editor, Vanessa Buschluter, has been following the story and spoke to Luke Jones.
We know that Yolanda Sanchez, that's the name of the mayor of the town of Cotija in the western state of Michoacán, was ambushed by a number of gunmen on Monday evening, local time. She was shot at least 19 times and died in hospital, as did her bodyguard, who was also injured in the same attack, and there was a gun battle raging because the bodyguard, of course, tried to protect Ms. Sanchez.
Do we know who could be behind this? I mean, have there been any arrests?
There have been no arrests, which, of course, is also shocking because this happened in the middle of the town and only at 2100 hours, 9 p.m. local time, so not in the middle of the night, and yet nobody was apprehended. But the suspicion is that one of the big and infamous cartels, a cartel called Jalisco New Generation, may be behind this. The suspicion is on this cartel because this mayor, Yolanda Sanchez, was actually kidnapped last year. She was kidnapped in September, and it is thought that the armed men who held her, who seized and held her at the time, were members of that same cartel. Now, that time she was released, and she recounted how the men who had held her had inflicted psychological torture on her and had come with certain demands, which the mayor at the time did not elaborate on. But what has been said in the past is that she was threatened by this cartel, and specifically what the cartel wanted was for her to put corrupted police officers in charge of security in this particular town and region.
Vanessa Buschluter. A new documentary is out telling the remarkable story of brothers Liam and Jessen Fisher, aged 7 and 10, and their cousin Caden Madsen, aged 9, from the US state of North Dakota, and how they discovered the fossilized skeleton of a teenaged Tyrannosaurus rex that died some 67 million years ago. Here's a clip from the documentary.
I thought it was pretty cool. It's big.
When we found it, I was like, that has to be a dinosaur. It has a super big femur. And we sent a picture to Tyler, and he said, that's a dinosaur.
Well, Tyler, as you just heard mentioned, is Dr. Tyler Lyson, a paleontologist at Denver Museum of Natural Science. He's a friend of the boys' family and spoke to Rebecca Kesby.
I have known Liam, Justin, and Caden and the family, you know, for quite some time. Sam knew, obviously, that I was a paleontologist and that I roamed those same badlands when I was a kid. And so over the last several years, he would take his boys and his nephew out looking for fossils. And over the years, he'd send me photos of his boys, like holding a piece of petrified wood or a clamshell or other things. And, you know, I would identify things for him and then tell him to keep looking, you know, because I knew they wanted to find a dinosaur. And so in July of 2022, Sam texts me this photo of his boy Liam lying down next to the leg of this dinosaur.
Wow.
And I was just so thrilled for them because I knew they'd been looking for several years for a dinosaur. And so I texted him back and I'm like, hey, congratulations. That's so awesome. You found a dinosaur. It's probably a duckbill dinosaur, but man, that's awesome.
So it turns out that it was a teenaged T-Rex. So I want to ask you why that is so significant, because I understand it's actually quite rare to find a T-Rex at that age.
Yeah, that's right. So there have been, you know, roughly maybe 100 or more than 100 T-Rex individuals found. Now, not all of those are that complete, but the vast majority of those belong to adult tyrannosaurs. And so we really only have maybe 5 or 6 publicly available juvenile Tyrannosaurus specimens from this interval of time, the very latest Cretaceous here in North America. And so there's been a lot of debate about the taxonomy of the group. Are there two Tyrannosaurs, Nanotyrannus and T-Rex, roaming the landscape? Is it one Tyrannosaur that just changes through time, you know, just changes in development? And the challenge with a lot of this is that there is not a lot of specimens to base these different ideas on. So it's really important to have another data point to help address some of these important issues.
Have you named this individual, and can you tell what killed it?
Yeah, so the discoverers of the find are always the ones who get to name the dinosaur. And so the three kids, Jessen, Liam, and Caden, named the dinosaur The Brothers. And they named it that because they consider their cousin Caden one of their brothers, and they were the ones who discovered it. And then they said they consider this teenaged T-Rex to be one of their brothers as well. So I thought that was a pretty fun and lovely name.
Future paleontologists, do you think?
Yeah, so Jeff, he's been wanting to be a paleontologist for many years. I know one year his dad sent me a picture of him dressed up as a paleontologist. And, you know, talking with him now, he says this has just underscored his desire to go out and become a paleontologist.
Dr. Tyler Lyson speaking to Rebecca Kesby. And that's all from us for now, but there'll be a new edition of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. You can also find us on X at Global News Pod. This edition was produced by Harry Bly and mixed by Caroline Driscoll. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Alex Ritson. Until next time, goodbye.
A world of social media where there's bubbles of conflicting opinions.
All kinds of wrong and misleading information.
Conspiracy theories.
Plants for various nefarious figures.
This has changed our world.
Whose Truth is a documentary series from the BBC World Service exploring misinformation in the digital age. Join me, Babita Sharma, as I hear from the Nobel laureates and young activists trying to tackle it.
Climate refugees can also lead climate action.
Listen now by searching for The Documentary wherever you get your BBC podcasts.